Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. And greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio. Our AccuWindow forecast today is partly cloudy with a strong chance of ice age. It's getting cold out there. The solar wind tonight, 329.5 kilometers per second. And in 2009, cosmic ray intensities have increased 19% beyond anything we've seen in the past 50 years, so says Richard Miewoldt of Caltech. The increase is significant, and it could mean we need to rethink how much radiation shielding astronauts take with them on deep space missions. Would be kind of crazy if we had to start making space shuttles out of lead. The cause of the surge is solar minimum, a deep lull in solar activity that began around 2007 and continues today. Quite the opposite of what you might think. Researchers have long known that cosmic rays go up when solar activity goes down. Right now, solar activity is as weak as it has been in modern times, setting the stage for what Miewoldt calls a perfect storm of cosmic rays. There has been a sharp decline in the sun's interplanetary magnetic field, down to 4 nanoteslas, from typical values of 6 to 8 nanoteslas, he says. This record low interplanetary magnetic field undoubtedly contributes to the record high cosmic ray fluxes. Earth, however, is in no great peril. Our planet's atmosphere and magnetic field provide some defense against the extra cosmic rays. Indeed, we've experienced much worse in the past. Hundreds of years ago, cosmic ray fluxes were at least 200 to 300% higher than anything measured during the space age. Researchers know this because when cosmic rays hit the atmosphere, they produce an isotope of beryllium, which is preserved in polar ice. By examining ice cores, it is possible to estimate cosmic ray fluxes more than 1,000 years into the past. Even with the recent surge, cosmic rays today are much weaker than they have been at times in the past millennium. We may now be returning to levels typical of past centuries. By the way, you know we monitor the earthquakes here. Last week, we only had 12 earthquakes. And there were only greater than 5, not very many at all, maybe 4. But this week, in one day, we had 46 earthquakes over 5.0 on the Richter scale. We also had a devastating tsunami. And I can tell you that the earth changes are beginning to increase in intensity and frequency. The fountain of youth may exist after all, as a study showed that scientists have discovered means to extend the lifespan of mice and primates. Scientists from the Institute of Healthy Aging at University College London extended the lifespan of mice by up to a fifth and reduced the number of age-related diseases affecting the animals after they genetically manipulated them to block production of the S6 kinase 1 protein. Scientists have shown since the 1930s that reducing the calorie intake by 30% for rats, mice, and in a more recent finding, primates, can extend their lifespan by 40% and have health benefits. So if you're walking around with a little extra papoose there in the front, gentlemen, or those extra love handles that are hanging over that belt and you're tempted to add 2 inches to the waistline of your pants, you're cutting your lifespan by as much as 40%. Time to cut back on the burritos. Lower temperatures greeted local residents on Thursday as skies cleared across most of central Florida. In fact, Daytona Beach International Airport reported a record-tying low of 58 degrees at 3:33 a.m. That tied the previous record set back in 2001 when we had another cool start to October. In addition to that, the Port Huron Wastewater Treatment Plant recorded a temperature of 32 degrees at 8 a.m., 1 degree colder than the record low set October 1st, 1935, according to information from the National Weather Service in Oakland County's White Lake Township. Now, we have been reporting to you for a number of months the changes in weather, at least in the Northern Hemisphere. What we have found from the collection of our data, and believe me, we've been watching both sides of the ledger, there were over 3,000 record low temperatures this summer. And in some cases, it was the warmest September on record for some states. But by the time they averaged the temperatures in from April until now, they have been going down. And researchers are perplexed by this, except to say that, well, the sun's activity is lower, and so it's going to make the planet warm less. They won't go so far as to say the planet is cooling, even though evidence strongly shows that since 1998, when temperatures peaked around the world, they have actually been dropping. And so the question tonight, at least for our first hour, and we do have a mystery guest we are trying to raise right now. We spoke to him earlier today. He is out and about, but he will join us later. Mr. G from the Northwest has some very startling information. We don't normally do conspiracy theories on this planet, at least on this radio program on this planet. On other planets, the radio program does do conspiracies. But that being said, this is not a theory. And so I can kind of set it aside. I can say, wait a minute. The bylaws that we set up when we started X Squared Radio was that we weren't going to pontificate. We weren't going to say the Republicans are doing this, the Democrats are doing this. Gee, is there a militaristic, pharmaceutical, industrial sub-nation that's ruling everything with billions of dollars and threatening us with mass genocide to make the parks less populated? However, when evidence surfaces where government-sponsored activities, factual activities, activities that are observable, documentable, start turning up, we get a little bit alarmed here. We get more or less concerned that perhaps they're receiving some kind of boldness. They're moving with impunity. And there are some things that perhaps you don't know when you listen to the mainstream media or even the alternative AM media. There are things that are just left out. To you, it seems like some babbling battle between two sides who are only worried about how many seats they have in their particular party. That it's more or less a little more aggressive than a challenging game of badminton between elites. I'm here to tell you there's more at stake than that. There is the ecology of the planet at stake. There is perhaps resonations that go beyond our solar system at stake. Perhaps we are not the only population here on Earth. Maybe there are civilizations that have been here longer than us, and we may proliferate at a much higher rate than those races do. And so from time to time, when we become population dense, as we are now, close to 7 billion live, conscious, rather unconscious human beings on the planet, racing about trying to fill up their own basket with plenty, pretty much oblivious to how they affect the rest of the planet. How can what I do possibly affect the world, they say. What we are seeing is vast nodes of constructive interference for things that are not healthy for the planet. What does that mean? It means that there are people out there who really believe that Mother Earth will just swallow up all the plastic bags and old shoes and tires that we choose to throw away. That I don't care what you do, I'm going to get mine. In fact, I'm going to drive as much as I want to drive, but you need to cut back. I'm going to drive my Hummer or my four-wheel drive V10 pickup, but you need to cut back because you're making prices too high for me. This is the attitude that we see out there in the civilized world, or shall we call it the uncivilized world. After all, when we look back in ancient history and we look at the Egyptians, or we look at the Mayans, or the Olmecs, or the Zapotecs, or the Hopi, we might say they were a primitive people. They didn't have the wheel. They didn't have steel. They didn't know how to manipulate energy. And yet, look what they built. Look at the roads. Look at the networks. Look at the government. Look at the health plans that they had. Look at their knowledge of the stars and of eternity, and even our day. They recorded it in stone. They recorded it on codexes in clay. And they weren't making up fables. They weren't making up legends and stories. What they were doing was recording the future, not as they saw it, but as they were taught it. Maybe they had shamans, each civilization or two, that they could detach themselves from time and realize that the entire universe is now, and they could see it and thus report it to us. But then maybe there were races that came from the future to them and taught them. One of the things that we realize when we start looking at the ancient records, we look at the way architecture is done, we look at the way records are kept, metal plates, clay tablets, scrolls, seals, is we don't see any precursors. In other words, we don't see grades 1 through 8, and then high school, and then later on a discovery, a breakthrough or two, and then genius. What we see is no kindergarten, no K through 8, no high school, no college, just genius. That comes when knowledge is imparted by someone who already knows. It lends credence to the story that ancients were taught by offworlders, or at least by races that were very old, that lived here in civilizations past and went through their cataclysms and managed to survive, managed to keep their encyclopedia alive, preserved. And when the smoke cleared and the weather became manageable again, and man living among the forests and the rocks and the wild berries and the game would get to the point where they had villages again and organization again and social structure again, they began developing language again, then they came forth. Then they said, we are, for lack of a better word, the shining ones. We have come here in amazing craft that smoke and thunder through the sky and glitter and glint in the sun during the day. They look like birds, or they look like wheels, or they look like cylinders, or they look like rockets. Coming to this earth, meeting with ancient civilizations and telling them, this is mathematics. This is the theory of force. These stars up here actually have planets going around them. This is where you came from. This is where we came from. And you are a planet among many in a federation, primitive as you may be. And we used to be like you, simple and free and living within nature and loving one another and caring for each and every form of life. But as we proliferated and as we became more populous, as we learned to tap into the resources of the earth herself, we stripped her of her copper, her gold, her coal, and now we in the latter days are stripping her of oil, drilling deep into her sphere and draining her of fossil fuels. And instead of making those things that last, plastics, coatings, fibers, different kinds of structures that will not only run the test of time, but provide us structural means of being able to fend off our environment, being able to reach out into the stars. Instead of doing that, we just simply distill off 9.21 gallons per barrel and call it diesel, and we stick it in our engines and burn it. And for well over a century, the world has been belching hydrocarbons and monoxides and nitrous oxides, sulfur dioxides into the atmosphere without regard for their day, for our day, for any day in the future. Only, yes, the skies are cloudy today, burning all this coal in a valley, and the fog does create a toxic atmosphere through which children had to be raised and contracted various kinds of diseases as they battled with that kind of atmosphere. But it's all for a good end, because the tycoons made their money. They bought their steamships and they went back and forth across the Atlantic as frequently as we go to the mall. Some of them stayed at sea because they liked being detached from the ground, and they liked the luxury and the sweetness of service given to them their entire lives. They move their opulence around the world like kings with no armies, fed off the sweat, supported by the backs of thousands who worked for 75 cents a day and all the potatoes they could carry home, who traded stamps for sugar and different kinds of commodities so that they could buy shoes or so that they could buy clothing. Meanwhile, there were such poverty upon the earth for decades, poverty upon the earth. But those with the power, those with the wealth, reaped the benefits of an inexpensive wage. Inexpensive? How about 75 cents a day? So today, here we are the first week in October 2009, and what we realize is that about 52% of our young people are not working. In days past, it was the fledgling teenager learning how to get along with a boss and a coworker, learning how to show up at the right time every day and punch a clock, learning how to earn money and save money and squander money, all valuable lessons. But while they're learning that, the seniors, as they get of age to retire or are forced out of their factory jobs or their office jobs, realize that they cannot survive on what Social Security pays them, and so they go back out into the workforce. Some of them never received a higher education. They relied upon the earning power of their husbands. Others were common laborers. They worked in sewing factories, auto shops, assembly plants. And what happened was they became so old, they became a liability for their employers. And so moving on into Social Security, they decided to retain their dignity rather than wait until it's time to go to the nursing home. They went out and they got another job. They worked at McDonald's and Taco Bell. They worked at Movie Time and wherever they could get a minimum wage job or a little bit better. Sure, it was only $400 to $600 a month, but it supplements that Social Security and gives them dignity, keeps them active and alive. Meanwhile, that job, once held by a 17-year-old or an 18-year-old, not only does that job get done way better because of the life experience, the interpersonal skills that that person 60 or 70 or even 80 years old has gained upon the job throughout their whole life. The greeter at Walmart, the person that put your burrito together at Taco Bell, the person that processes your gift wrapping, if managed or at least conducted by a senior, you have a tendency to get a better quality job than you would with a teenager, usually. Not saying always. Teenagers are pretty darn sharp. But in the meantime, what's happened is these low-earning jobs, these low-liability jobs, are being taken by those who are in retirement age and not taken by the young people who desperately need them in order to learn these skills. So what happens to a generation? Speaking of generations past, the wars that we have fought have called to duty a generation of those who are willing to put on a uniform, sail across a sea, and march into a hive of bullets because they're told to, because they're defending freedom, because they're spreading democracy. And that was a very special generation. I'm not sure this generation would even do that. Now we have a generation of young people who, in order to get a decent living, in order to get some training, in order to get money for college, they turn to the armed services. And so the armed services, even in times of war, even when the odds are very high that you will end up in the field of battle in Iraq or in Afghanistan, still the volunteer ranks are full. Not because those people are lining up to defend flag and country, but because it is a means to an end. 4 years to 6 years under that kind of service, and what you end up with is a GI Bill, which can help you in college. And that's the main goal. That's what they go for. Since the mid-70s, that's how the service has changed. It is a job. It is an adventure. It is everything that you need in order to carry on to the next phase of your life. And what happens there is, as you entrust your life to that great benefactor called the federal government, you might learn that your will, your sovereignty, is broken. As you go through basic training, they strip away what was once you, and they replace it with the new you, with a you that's willing to take orders, with a you that doesn't question, with a you that will do anything that you're told to do by a higher command. I have many, many acquaintances who have been in the reserves and in active duty, and almost all of them have seen action in the last 5 years. That's a different kind of economic stress that's upon the community, upon the nation, upon the society that makes up this country. And that kind of brings us to the subject of tonight's discussion. I want to open up the phone lines because this could be a hot one. In a way, it is paranormal because we're going to tie this in to who and what may be outlining this agenda, and it has little to do with nationality, with sovereignty, with constitutions, or dictatorships, or royalties. You're about to learn something that's going to put the world in perspective for you for years to come. The phone lines, toll-free, 888-228-4494. That's 888-228-4494. If you've got free nights and weekends, or you just like using that cell phone, no problem. If you can get to a cell phone tower, you can reach us. The number is 530-776-5154. Don't forget, we're using Skype tonight. You can always call in Skype, and you just have to get all the bbsradio.com, and that will get you hooked up. And there's a couple other creative ways that you can come in. You can come in chatting on Skype. Just look for Brooks Agnew, our vision officer out there, and you can come in. One of my greatest advisors out there, writes me multiple times during the week, has informed us that we have no idea how many youth don't want to work. They think someone owes them. Well, it was that way in my day, too. We had young people that felt the world owed them a living. And I think it was because they were raised by parents who thought the world owed them a living. Whether you're a minority or whether you have some kind of axe to grind, there are enough programs out there to catch everyone's fancy. It's all a process of vote buying, people. It's been done that way forever in democracies. In the old days, they would just bring the old Model A or the Model T down with the back loaded with whiskey bottles, and they would hand out the whiskey about 100 yards away from the polls, and they would be told, go pull the handle for Mr. Whatever or Miss Whatever. Democrats, Republicans, communists, they all did it. And they still do it. Only now what happens is they get in office and they've got this unbelievable, never-ending checking account. And if they need votes, they just start writing checks. We need votes in this demographic? No problem. We need votes in that demographic? No challenge whatsoever. And that's the way it works. And then once that a group gets used to the money, once they get used to that monthly check or that quarterly check or that big check that helped their business get started, why, the next time they need money, or the next time the government needs them, and I should say the next time the party needs them, all they have to do is snap their fingers and these people come a-running. Why? Because they're afraid. If they don't, they're not going to get that check. And there are special interest groups from top to bottom, people. Senior citizens, minorities, handicapped, gays, lesbians, you name it. There are so many special interest groups. We're all special interest groups. And when the government wants to manipulate the masses, they go after you. They tempt you. They manipulate you. And what we're trying to do is get you to realize that you're a sovereign being. You're already in charge. Sooner or later, and hopefully sooner, the people of this world will realize that leaders cannot lead without people willing to follow. People were not willing to follow. They couldn't lead. They could throw a war and nobody would come. They could make a policy that no one would support. Case in point, let me just give you a couple of examples. How about the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit on the freeway? I know. There aren't many freeways that are at 55 miles an hour again, although it's pretty good ecological sense. You do use less fuel at that speed. When they enacted that speed limit, it was obeyed by almost no one. When they raised it to 60, still 90% of the people disobeyed it. 70? Well, now you're starting to get to the speed that everybody feels pretty comfortable. 75, very rarely do you find someone that speeds an excess of 75. They might go 81, they might go 82, but you're not going to see somebody out there 95 or 100 miles an hour. Not as often as you do when the speed limit is 55. Now, this has been in these higher speed limit zones, has been a terrible, terrible loss of revenue for the local communities. Because as they raise the speed limit, there are less violators because there is a natural speed to roads. There's a natural speed to roads. This means that you really only need two signs on the freeway. One is slower traffic, keep right. And the other one is drive safe and prudent. Period. And then start writing tickets for aggressive driving and start writing tickets for safety violations. And you're going to get those folks that need to have their attitude adjusted a little bit. But it isn't going to be wholesale. It's not going to be a society that violates the law. It's not going to be an entire society that chooses to do something en masse that's outside the natural order of things. And yet, that's where we are right now. The people are being asked to do something en masse outside the natural order of things. And the reason we're talking about that tonight is because that intention, that resonance that's put out there by individuals, even if they're obeying all of the rules and regulations, the fact that they're doing so under duress, they're doing so without their heart being in it, they're doing so without love as their motivating energy. Instead, the motivating energy is fear. And that has a resonant effect on the universe. Now, there are some things going on now that are not speculative. They're not conspiracy theory. They're real. Right now. It involves your money. It involves the ecology, the environment, the balance of society, the natural order of things. When certain individuals or small groups of individuals that control the checkbook are able to take control of that, it is the downfall of any nation. Herodotus, one of the most well-renowned historians and prolific writers of all time, the basis upon his words inspired documents from the Magna Carta, the Constitution of the United States, the House of Commons, the House of Lords, almost everything that's modern and stable and beneficial was taken from his work. Herodotus said, "It is the death of any nation when the populace can capture for itself some of the public treasury." In other words, when the population has the ability to write itself a check out of the Internal Revenue Service, out of the treasury of the United States of America, it is the death of that nation. People, we are there. We are there right now. 435 members of Congress have passed more legislation that confiscates the wages that you earn, and they confiscate the profits of the company for which you work, and they confiscate the value in your home, and they even own the banks that take your mortgage. And now, for hundreds of thousands of you, and it's growing every day, the government is a direct monetary partner with the company for whom you work. This has many words. It's been called many things throughout the centuries. I don't really know what to call it except outside the natural balance of things. As we see the energy that this puts out, that this resonates in our society, the stress, the failure, the lack of opportunity that it gives people, you see that it is fulfilling the goals, the very goals and outlines of those kinds of leaders. It's difficult to fathom how much of your money is taken from you every single year and applied to programs I know you would not support. There is on the earth an organization now called the Department of Homeland Security. It's sort of like having a safety guy working in your plant. You go 5 or 6 years without a mistake, without somebody losing a finger or an eye, nothing serious, maybe a Band-Aid here and there, no big deal. And then somebody brilliant looks at the budget and says, hey, we need to cut back here. Hey, look at this safety guy. What do we need a safety guy for? We haven't had an accident in 10 years in this plant. Well, you realize that the reason you haven't had an accident in 10 years is because the safety guy is out there preaching to people that they must wear their sunglasses or their safety glasses. They must wear protective gloves. They must wear steel-toed shoes. And they must take care of themselves on and off the job. And that's what the safety guy does. So one has to say to himself or herself, I have a government whose department has gone from a stopgap, something that lets us coordinate between departments. I saw something in an airport, so it gets reported to local authorities. I saw something on the freeway. I got an email or saw a YouTube or whatever. It allows these agencies to talk to one another in a way that they were never able to do before. Now they're able to do it, and now it seems like it's much easier to connect the dots and make sure that the nation stays safe. Have we had a reason for that? That's a good question. That's what happens when the host takes a drink to smooth his throat while he's talking to you. We'll keep trying to raise our guest every 10 minutes throughout the show. In the meantime, and by the way, I use the word show. That's not the word we use here. We use the word program. A show is something that's done for entertainment. Yes, we come on the air to entertain you, but in the process of entertainment, we inform you, we inspire you, we make it to where when you wake up to go to work on Monday morning, you've got an extra tool in your toolbox to master yourself, to become master of your own sovereignty, to understand what is going on in space, to understand what is going on inside the earth and on the earth, and maybe give you enough energy of hope that you can overcome that nagging feeling that something is going wrong out there. Because if you'll have that feeling, maybe it won't go wrong. It just won't get any traction. It won't have the kind of resonance that it takes to get that constructive interference and gain some momentum. You know how hard it is to get people to come out for an event. You're going to throw a block party or you're going to throw a frisbee championship at the local park. That's hard to get people to come out. People are busy. People got stuff going on. But if you want to go out there and say, oh, by the way, we're going to have free food and a free pair of Nike tennis shoes for all the kids, they will line up from here to L.A. because you're giving something away. You have to bribe them to get them out. Case in point, you want to raise money to perform some kind of project, some kind of exploration, like we do with the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition. And you put your intention out there that you need donations. You need some angel, some investor to give you a kickstart. And you don't realize how hard that is. it sounds easy when you're on the outside. Oh, wow, why don't you just go get a couple of $1 million and get it done? I mean, gee, I know somebody can write a check for that today. Uh-huh. I bet it doesn't happen every day. I bet you can talk to 50,000 people, which you probably won't. Let's say you talk to 50 people. That's a more reasonable number. Yeah, there you go. Talk to 50 people, and each one of those 50 people know 50 people. And if you can get the feedback one more layer deep, you got 50 people that know 50 people that know 50 people. That's a pretty good-sized group of people. I would say in that group, not one single one, not a group of 50, not a group of 1,000, has ever raised more than $200,000 from investors. It doesn't work that way. To raise something more than a couple $100,000 from a single investor, something really amazing has to happen. First of all, you got to meet that person that's got a pot full of money and doesn't mind spending it on what you want to spend it on. You might as well be throwing it up a horse's rear, I can tell you most of that stuff. But they'll still do it. Investors invest based on their guts anyway, not really numbers. But I can guarantee you that the companies that you see out there that are raising money, supposedly raising money, allegedly raising money, the headlines that you see are nowhere close to accurate, believe me. It's only there to manipulate their stock. It's only there to scare their competitors. The real world is money is very hard to come by for new business ventures. Very hard to come by. As tight as you feel it is, they feel it even tighter. Because, you know, it's one thing to be making $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year and make a bad investment. You can rebound from that. Even if you have to make payments for 4 or 5 years, you could rebound from it. But you get somebody who is used to making a couple $100,000 a year, and they get in a position and they land $10 million or $20 million in a windfall, they sell a company or they move a product, or they sign a contract, or they get a bonus of some kind, those people will watch that money like a hawk. They're not going to spend it locally. They're not going to help anyone like that or this, because that money is a once or maybe twice in a lifetime deal for them. Once it's gone, it's gone. And what they really want to do is take that money and put it into something that will make them more money. I know, you're saying, well, gosh, how much is enough? How much is enough, people? The guy gets $5 million off of his tire company that he sells. Isn't that enough? Can't he retire on that? Yes, of course he can retire on that. But that isn't what you want. That isn't what society needs. That's not what you need. What you need is that person that got that money to turn around and find a need in his community and invest in it. Why? Because if he retires on the $200,000 a year he can net off of $5 million in the bank, sure, he can go drink margaritas and sugar white sand and be taken care of by cabana girls the rest of his life. But does that help you? Does that help your society? No, it doesn't. And what happens is lots and lots and lots of people are doing that. More millionaires have come to that point in economic security than ever before in history. It's estimated as many as 50 to 100 millionaires a month are being formed out there. In some industries, you will see a recession. But in most of them, my friends, it is blowing and going. There's so much business, companies cannot keep up with it. Everybody is busy right now on a wholesale level. And that means that sooner or later, the economy is going to catch up to that and it's going to grow. And it's going to surge ahead. It is going to surge ahead. Now, does that mean you have to quit what you're doing and go out and get on the assembly line somewhere? That means you have to start your own business so that you can take a risk and make more money? Well, in a way, it does. Some of you, most of you, need to realize that you're all self-employed. Yes, you might get W-2 income. Yes, you may have a boss to whom you answer, and if you don't make him or her happy, you're not going to have a job. But at the end of the day, people, you are self-employed. When you get up tomorrow morning and you go to work, as you open up that workstation today, and you put on the headphones and you work on your AutoCAD drawings or you work on your cost analysis and you're listening to this program, you realize right here, right now, because I'm telling you the truth, you are self-employed. Your security, your job security begins and ends with your left hand and your right hand. What you can do is your job security. What you can do, what you can be, is the value of the society. That's where we are, people. That's what we're doing. So whether you work for an hourly wage or a salary, you've got to get this through your head. You are self-employed. You have a business plan that you are working. Now, it might take you 20 years or 40 years to realize it, but you're putting a little bit of money away each week, and you're eventually going to invest in the things you really like doing. But you're all self-employed. That there is no job security from your boss. If things get rough on him, he's going to get an order from higher up. You need to go in there and lay off 20. Bill, I forgot to tell you that. By this Friday, go ahead and take care of it, and that way we can lower payroll. Well, gee, Bill's got something on his shoulders now. He has the livelihood of not only that employee, but his or her spouse, children, grandchildren, the future of the entire community rests on whether Bill gets to keep his job or not. Because if Bill loses his job, he might not find another right away. He might have to dig into his savings. He might have to sell some tools or sell some fertilizer or furniture to keep up with that. He might have to. And if he does, that means somebody's going to buy his stuff at a fraction on the penny. Bill is going to lose money. Bill is going to lose momentum. And Bill is not going to feel good about himself. Why did I get myself into this? What did I do wrong? I'm telling you, you are self-employed. Work from that idea that everything you do will eventually affect the universe. And you better be getting about it. Because there's the energy of progress, the energy of discovery, the energy of love, the energy of ascension is out there. And it doesn't have much time. Because you feel it and I feel it. There is a message of scarcity that's going on out there. And it is gaining in power and resonation. And I hate to tell you this, but it's coming for us all. And you think, gosh, isn't there more than enough to spare? I mean, can't I work harder, work faster? Can I get a second job? Can I just get lucky? Can't I just get lucky? Yes, you could. Or you could make your own luck. In our second hour, we're going to talk about just that. How do you consider your life? How do you pull from the universe energy that you need to make your life more abundant? Call it what you want. You want to call it the law of attraction? That's fine. You want to call it resonance? That's okay too. I can tell you the mathematics behind it and the fact that it works. As you consider your lot this Sunday afternoon, many of you have listened to the words of wise men who have been talking on the World Wide Web and over broadcast channels all around the world this weekend. This weekend, for many churches, is sort of the wrap-up of the year. It is the month or 2 months before the real Christmas season. It is the beginning of commerce around the world. And there are many pontifications going on right now, one of which is known as General Conference. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has. You might want to watch it, you might not. Some of it's very religious, and some of it's very spiritual, but still great words being said by great people, and you could parse it for yourself. Unless you want to talk about something else, I'll be happy to switch over to any subject you like. But in the next hour, we're going to talk about how you involve yourselves in the mathematical formula, a mathematical formula that makes your energy part of your program of abundance. It's not silly. It works. Those of you that have been listening to this program for a while, maybe you can call in with your own report as you have bought The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 3, or you have heard various programs on this station, and you've used that mathematical principle and you've changed your life. We are more than willing to take your phone calls and hear your stories. Toll free, 888-228-4494. Anywhere else on planet or off planet, if you can get to a cell phone tower, you can get to us. It's 530-776-5154. Not too much doom and gloom tonight, people. We're going to be talking about very uplifting things. Contemplate a little bit. We'll be right back with more X Squared Radio. If you're wondering what you're going to do for Halloween, I've got a good suggestion for you, just in case you haven't been to a convention lately. I think you should make your way up to Burlington, Wisconsin, to the Vortex Conference. That's going to be something, oh my gosh, great speakers up there. I mean, yes, I'm going to be there too. But I'm going there to see Jesse Marcel and Don Schmidt and Tom Carey and Stanton Friedman. That's who I'm. I've never met him before. We've spoken to him here on this program, but I am really going to be looking forward to this. It begins October 30th. October 30th. That's coming up. Still plenty of time to get yourself up to Burlington, Wisconsin. Very inexpensive to attend this conference, people. And this is one of the ones that you can tell your grandkids about. Because there was an event back in 1947 here in the U.S. in New Mexico called Roswell. I can tell you that it is the greatest cover-up in the history of this country, maybe the history of the world. And the fact that there was hard evidence, the fact that it surprised everyone, including the occupants of the crafts that crashed. And that was completely antiseptically cleaned up and buried away. However, one of the eyewitnesses did a very good job. He was a professional. I mean, a professional observer, a professional officer. He did his duty, and he was an honorable man. And his name was Jesse Marcel. His son is going to be at this conference. He is going to tell the story. He held the medal in his hands, people. I think you should hear his story. October 30th through November 1st. And here's how you get there. Go to xsquaredradio.com and click on the Vortex Conference banner. Everything you need to know is there. And you can make yourself a path to enlightenment. Many, many very cool things going to happen there. Also, if you're getting ready to start your own business, you have your own business, or you just want to make your mark, eventually you're going to need a business card. You might as well get them for free. So why don't you come to xsquaredradio.com, click on the VistaPrints banner. You can get 250 business cards for free. Just pay for the shipping and it arrives right at your door a few days later, professionally printed. If you want to add that glossy UV coating to it, upgrade the card stock, or make your own logo or your own background, it's only a few dollars more. Professional printing at lightning speed. Vista Prints. Check it out, X Squared Radio. Don't go away, people. We'll be back in 40 more seconds. Don't go away. More X Squared Radio coming to you right after this.
The spice expands life. The spice expands consciousness. The spice is vital to space travel.
All good stories start with once upon a time. Once upon a time, there was a land that opened up to the world, and thousands, yea, millions came to her looking for opportunity. Why did they come to the new land called America? Why were they willing to give up everything that not one family, generations of families, millennia of families had enjoyed? Land, heritage, family, friends, history, pride, tribal unity. They gave it all up. They sold everything and made their way to the docks. They climbed aboard a ship barely 50 feet long and braved the rough and ready Atlantic Ocean and came to this world. As soon as they stepped off, many of them did not even have the money to get here. So they sold themselves, and they even sold their children to get here. And through the experience of indentured servitude, they came here willing to work for pennies for years, just for the prospect of being able to reach their greatest potential. Whether they felled trees and cleared the land and planted their own, or whether they dug into mountains and found their fortune, or whether they laid rail or made houses or sewed clothing, they made their own. What was the difference? Why did they come here? It is because in their land, in their homeland, the ability to reach the fullness of their potential had been eliminated completely by the leadership of the governments of those worlds. They confiscated their wages. They manipulated their education. They stopped them from climbing. And that is not the human condition. The human condition strives for freedom. The human condition strives for liberty. And it reaches out, reaches up and out into the maelstrom of knowledge, pulling down the things that they don't know. They don't have books. They don't even know how to read, many of them. And yet they made their fortunes. And generation after generation, those young people, then middle-aged, have their own families, grow old, and it goes on and on until now, until us, until we, the people of 2009, inherit. Once there was a king, and he was a good king, and he wanted a legacy, and so he commissioned a great highway to be built across his land. Year after year, the work went by, laying and cutting stone, clearing trees, lowering hills, widening creeks, getting things in order. Year after year, the progress went on until finally the highway was finished. To celebrate, the king decided to have a national contest to see who could travel the highway best. The word went out by courier from border to border. Finally, the day of the contest, the great celebration came. And they came from every corner of the kingdom to travel the highway, from where they could get onto it to the end. There were prancing horses and marching bands, flags and gymnasts and tumblers, magicians and artists, great flags and great banners flying. One by one they finished the highway all day long, until finally, almost dark, just after dusk, one last man showed up. The knees were worn out of his pants. His hair was disheveled, his hands soiled, except in one he carried a sack. Approaching the king, he apologized. "My king, I am so sorry. It took me so long to travel the highway, but I got to this point in the highway and there was a large pile of trash in the middle of the road. And I stopped to clear it away to the side, and I found this bag of gold underneath, and I thought that I would bring it to you because I know it belongs to you." And the king said, "Oh no, my good man, the gold belongs to you. Because you see, he who travels the highway best is he who makes it easier for those who follow." Mark from Ohio, you're on line one. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Agnew. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great, sir. Welcome.
You're on a roll tonight. You really brought up some interesting points, one of which I think is so profound that we really do work for ourselves. And there really is no job security in that sense, so you really have to kind of really think that everything you do matters and that you are working for yourself truly. right now I'm working at Ohio State, and my title, for whatever a title's worth, is research programmer. I'm down in the biomedical research tower, and I'm developing a clinical trial system that will be used for cancer trials. And there are three other programmers I'm working with on the West Coast at the University of California, San Diego. But anyway, this project has really put me to the test. Until recently, I was working 7 days a week, 70 hours a week all the time. But I'm starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel, and things are going a lot better. Better now, but it's so true. You really do work for yourself, and you have to kind of look at it that way, I think. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that in there for whatever it's worth.
Well, I appreciate the perspective. You know, I've done a fair amount of research myself, and I can tell you, when you're working with the perspective that I'm just, making Petri dishes, and I'm just spreading cultures on them, and I'm just doing my job, 9 to 5, it's a little bit different. You don't have the energy. You don't have the foresight. You're just doing what the regimen tells you to do. But when, just as you did, I'm working on a cure for cancer, that changes everything. You know, I grew up in the automotive industry, and I used to walk down the line and watch the work ethic. Now, they showed up on time, and they had the throughput, but the ethic of their workmanship is what showed through. One story that I recall, there was a preacher who was exceptional, just exceptional, and his congregation was just breaking the walls down in his building, so he had enough in the coffer that he decided to commission an expansion to the building. And as the building bricklayers were out there laying the brick on the outside of the expansion, he decided one weekday to just go out and see what they were doing. So he comes upon one bricklayer, and the guy is just working like a madman. I mean, mortars flying everywhere, and he's throwing mortar down, throwing bricks up. Unbelievable rate of production. But it's just like, everything is poured out. It's just helter-skelter everywhere. And he said, what are you doing? What are you doing? He says, I'm laying bricks. What does it look like? And he goes around the corner, and he sees another bricklayer, also very, very fast, but not a wasted movement. It's like poetry in motion. The perfect amount of mortar scooped up and laid down as the bed, slapped on the end of the brick. The brick is deftly moved into place. The mortar is wiped off without any on the outside of the brick. No wasted movement. The guy is barely breaking a sweat, laying 200-300 bricks an hour. And he says, what are you doing? He says, I'm building a church.
Oh, wow.
Big very difference important. In what they were doing.
Oh, that's so true. So, yeah, it's like you always bring the example out of I think, when you're hitting the tether ball. That's the example you always bring out. And if you swing at the right time, then things kind of work perfectly, and if you get out of sync with the universe, then it's all a struggle.
Well, sure, you get out of sync with the universe, then you're being destructively interfered with by all the other noise in the universe. But if you'll just listen for that exact right moment to make that call, to put that effort forth, to write that report, to submit the report, it's just, it's uncanny. It's like being in the zone. Or somebody says, I was just looking for that 50-page report inhibitive culture growth. What do they call that? Where bacteria eat up the food that the other bacteria are using. It's called the competitive inhibition. That's what it's called. Jeez, right there on the tip of my tongue. So I was just looking for that report on competitive inhibition, and here it is laying on my desk. How did you know? Great, perfect timing. That's the construct of interference, of being in resonance with the universe. You're in the zone. In the zone. Every ball you hit goes over the wall almost. Remember Mr. October? Reggie Jackson got to the plate. They threw him three fastballs, and he smacked him over the wall like he was in batting practice. Never been done before.
One thing that you had said during one show kind of stuck in my mind of of you have an intention. In other words, you, at least in your mind, you want to do a certain thing, but I think what you were trying to say is you have to keep your mind open as to what you're supposed to do or what the universe gives you. And that may be part of that process of where we get in sync with, if you want to call it God, the Holy Spirit, or the universe, where we're being guided. Am I kind of on the right track there? Or?
Sure. It makes complete sense. You know, I speak to people all the time, and, you know, I say, well, what's your dream? And it doesn't matter what it is. But then I'll say, well, what are you doing about it? Well, at first I got to have $1 million. Well, wait. What are you concentrating on? Well, I'm concentrating on raising that $1 million so that I can go do this thing. And I said, well, have you ever given any thought to the idea that maybe it's not the $1 million that's going to get you there? Maybe the universe has another way of facilitating that to happen. And they haven't. And that's why they're out of sync with the universe. So they spend their entire life in frustration, I might say, which spills down to everything, including how they enjoy their own children, on the $1 million instead of on their goal. And that's why the universe does not resonate with what it is they're dreaming of.
That's so true. Do you mind if I change our subject here real quick?
I've had it. We're starting a revolution tonight, by the way.
You know, you mentioned Andrew Basago, and I saw he has out on YouTube now. I shouldn't say he does, but I think Jessica Mystic interviewed him. It was like 30-some 10-minute segments where he went over his whole story, and that is just an amazing story. Have you done any more investigation of Andrew Basago and his whole, I guess he was involved in a project called Project Pegasus, which
right.
involved teleportation to Mars.
Right. Yeah, I interviewed him twice. I interviewed him once as a guest host for James Gilliland, and then we interviewed him once on this program, but we only did an hour. And the reason that I only did an hour is because I spent 7 hours talking with him the previous day. And I decided at the end of that he was working on a book and he wanted to tell the whole story at one time. He needed to have some momentum with it, not just a piece at a time out there. And so I decided to save him a spot when he's got his book in draft form, it's ready to go to the publisher, or he has a publication date, or it comes out. I would prefer to get it at the publication date, but he'll come on this program for 3 hours and he will tell the whole story. And let me tell you, Mark, you should sit down for 7 hours with the guy because you will learn things about what our government knows that'll just blow your mind.
Well, you know, one story that he told that really was absolutely fascinating to me is where he said when he was very young, he went to an Air Force base with his father where he met Mars-based humans that were visiting here on Earth, and he described the craft that they had right there on the tarmac at the Air Force base. And they spoke briefly with his father, and then they got in their craft, and he described that craft taking off. Do you remember him speaking about that?
Yeah, the these were kind of slightly rotund, bald, what he described
yes.
as older gentlemen, and they had
yes.
silver suits on, and they, after speaking with his, they were actually there for another purpose, having another meeting, but they spoke to his father while he was next to him. And then they got in their craft, and the craft just kind of sputtered like, you know, chitty, bang, bang, out the hangar door onto the tarmac, and his dad leans down to Andrew and says, "Watch this." And it kind of did three pulses, one, two, and three, and it was gone, like Mach 10. It was out of there.
I could visualize that perfectly in my mind for some reason. And that was one of the scenes in his whole story that just was just absolutely amazing to me. But I don't know if you found this, like, parts of his story I found very, very disturbing, in a sense. The fact that they could travel so easily back and forth in time, and it's almost, I don't know how to explain that, but the fact that our government has that kind of technology that they've been keeping a secret, just that just bothered me. Did you react that way at all?
Well, there were a couple aspects to it that bothered me. It wasn't so much the visits to the past, except the fact that they went to places like the signing of the Constitution.
Right.
And I was thinking to myself, well, there were no cameras watching the signing of the Constitution. How do we even know it was done that way? However, the idea that they could go back to a past moment in a general vicinity and they could view a great event like that, and I think he even goes back and witnesses the crucifixion of Jesus. But if they can do that, then they could go to even less significant times when they want to find out, for instance, who was really responsible for 9/11. Or who was really responsible for the assassination of Kennedy, or go back and fix, even alter something in the past that changed something profoundly in the future. Now, I understand they decided not to do that because it would change all of the research of the subsequent lines forward, but the temptation is too high. I've worked in the government. I've been in the services, and I can tell you there's no such reservation. If they think they can win a war, they will blow it up, even if there's a chance it would light the entire atmosphere on fire. They will do it.
Well, didn't he say that as a child that they pushed him forward in time, and he was at Washington, D.C., and a portion of it was underwater?
Yes, it was underwater. It was under 50 feet of water, which... if you, you know, lots of people have received that. I mean, if you read the third volume of The Ark of Millions of Years, you'll hear the same thing, that a 1,500-foot wall of water takes out the eastern seaboard. And fortunately, there's enough warning that some of the leaders are actually out of town at that time, and some semblance of government does survive. But Foggy Bottom is gone.
Now, do you think that is an alternate reality, an alternate universe, an alternate timeline, or is that what you believe we're going to have to face?
Well, you know, I asked him that very same question.
Ah.
It's one thing to go back into the past and just observe and resist the temptation of, you know, Mr. President, why don't you not take this drive today, 1963, and watch history change. That's one thing, to go in the past. But to go into the future and view a future timeline and then come back in the past, which is the present for you and I and also Andrew, what stops you from talking about that just once? And that ripple effect goes out into time, and lo and behold, some piece of energy changes. An accident doesn't happen because somebody's aware now that this pump is going to quit on this nuclear power plant, or this oil tanker is going to be off the coast at this particular time. You are now aware of that condition, and a new future line has been drawn because you're in the past. You're living in it, and you're aware of what's going to happen in the future.
One last thing that I'd like... I'll take your response off the air. The final thing, and I thought this was very positive and very hopeful about his story, that I thought this was fascinating, and I hope you remember this part. When he talked about the link between the pyramids and Mars and the civilization that was on the Earth at that time, do you remember that section?
Yes, but we didn't cover it in that much depth. There was actually another presenter there talking about Egypt. Interesting how I think the two cultures, the one that once existed on Mars and the remnant that's still there, and the builders of what we call Egypt today. By the way, that was built a long time before the Egyptians ever got there.
Well, didn't he say 11,000 or something like that B.C. or something along those lines?
That's right. Actually, 9,500 B.C., so 11,000 years ago, just about.
And I believe he said that that was the level of technology that the culture here on Earth was at that time, much higher than where we are now, evidently. And then I think, and I don't know this for sure, but wasn't Mars a colony of the Earth?
I don't remember whether Mars was a colony of Earth or Earth was a colony of Mars, but there's definitely a cross-pollination there. And by the way, he says there's something like 600,000 Earthlings, people that were born here on Earth, now serving inside of Mars.
Wow. Wow. I'll get off here. One thing, if you get a chance, Google Ohio Exopolitics. I'm making a web portal of all related exopolitics and UFO films that are all over the net, and people can look at contactees and researchers, and you could probably spend a week just watching movies.
Hey, that's great. Are you going to be up at the Vortex Conference in Burlington, Wisconsin?
I'm going to have to look at that. Certainly, that would be an option. Definitely.
Oh, man. How could you pass up a face-to-face, you know, lunch with Jesse Marcel and hear, and you can ask him questions? I mean,
you know,
I'm not passing it up.
I've never been to a UFO conference in my life yet. That's crazy. I really need to get off my duff and do that.
I think that one would be more fun than the Vegas one. The one thing about the one that they have in Vegas is, you know, people go, and during the day they're at the convention, and then in the evening they're in Vegas. I mean, it's you're taken out and then put back in, and taken out and put back in, and you really can't get the flavor of what's going on. And there's so much conspiracy theory that's just, you know, fed out there, like intravenous. They spray it in the air, like the ambiance. But at Burlington, you know, I've known Mary Sutherland for years. In fact, my first radio interview was on her program. And I really think this is going to be the face-to-face kind of meeting that I relish. I don't like sitting in the audience and watching it like a show. I want to sit down and talk with them. I want to look in their eyes when they tell their story.
You know, the amount of information that's out there is astounding. I found a link, and I put it in this portal that I'm working on the Howard Menger story. Have you ever studied his story?
No, I haven't. Tell me about it.
Howard Menger, basically, he is a contactee. He lived in New Jersey, and he had face-to-face meetings for many years with a group of extraterrestrials that were very, very human-looking. They transferred knowledge to him. He built a radio-controlled anti-gravity device that he flew for years. Eventually, one day, it got out of control, and he lost it, and it landed like several hundred miles away. The CIA or the FBI or something like that tracked him down and asked him where he got this knowledge, and it just so ended up, they ended up hiring him, and he ended up working for the government for years and years and years. But if you Google Ohio Exopolitics, you can click under contactees and go to the Howard Menger story, and you can click on his YouTube video, and you can watch his story. It's pretty amazing stuff. But I'll get off here, and it was great talking to you, and I'll catch
Thanks.
You next time.
Thanks, Mark. Come back anytime.
Bye-bye.
Good night. So the thing is, Earth explorers, that we come to a point where we're empowered with knowledge. Faith is put away, and now you have pure knowledge. And upon that pure knowledge, you stand and you reach even further, not standing upon the winds of doctrine, but standing upon something that's solid and doesn't move and is irrefutable. And we want to hear what you have to say about it. So you can call toll-free anywhere in the country or Canada, 888-228-4494, or anywhere else on planet or off planet, if you can reach a cell phone tower, you can get to us, 530-776-5154. Now, I know you're out there, and I know you have an opinion on this, and we're about to take this to the next level here. As I was saying earlier in this hour, we have a history, a legacy. Although we're a very young nation, the desire, the intention of those people who signed compacts, who indentured their lives and the lives of their children to escape the confiscatory governments that controlled them, and not for 100 years, for thousands of years. They left there and they came here because this was the frontier, and there was no organized government to confiscate half of your earnings. There was no one to tell you what you could or could not think, what you had to learn in school, how far you could go up the social ladder. That is changing right before our eyes. As I was telling you before, there are more millionaires made each month now than ever in the history of the world. And something happens to someone when they become economically independent from what we consider the wage and labor world. But the wage and labor world has changed. Not much since medieval times. The thing that made, and my good friend Alex out there says past tense, the thing that made past tense America great wasn't just her religiosity and virtue. It was the free enterprise freedoms that allowed each individual genius to flourish or fail. Now, we all have genius at something. Some people try at it their entire lives and never make it. And sometime in their life, they realize that it's the trying that's fun. It's the building of the sandcastle that's fun, not the finishing of the sandcastle. And there's just something about being out there in the dirt, cutting your own lumber, building your own house. You can see the fruits of your labors piling up in front of you. Something that you can hand to your kids, something that you can enjoy with your grandchildren. But it isn't that way today in the wage and labor world. What happens today in the wage and labor world is that half of what you make, and sometimes even more than that, it depends on whether you take advantage of one loophole or another, half of it is confiscated from you. How you own things. You got to have a car to get to and from work. Well, guess what? It costs money to license that vehicle. You must insure that vehicle. If you don't, they'll come to your house and they'll take the license plates off of it. And then you have to take out a loan for that vehicle, which means you have to submit your personal private earnings to that system so that you can qualify for that loan. Each year, you must tell authorities what you made during the year. Never before has it been that way. Never before. It's always been, make as much as you want. But when you spend your money, you will pay a portion to the government. The government needs to survive. The government needs to pay for these various programs. One of those programs I want to talk to you tonight about. I know a lot of you people know something about this. It's called the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration. In years past, it was to make sure food was safe consumption. It was to make sure drugs were safe so that, you know, as few as possible side effects and bad things could happen. In years past, they used to put cocaine in baby formula. Well, sooner or later, the Food and Drug Administration began to take action and eliminate these things. But as they gained in power and authority. It became unbelievable, unbelievable. I'm going to tell you something you probably don't know because you've never seen this on camera. You've never seen this on the news. You've never seen a photograph in a newspaper. Why? I don't know. It came to my knowledge today that our own president, our current president, smokes. And he doesn't just smoke a little. He smokes 2 packs a day. Now, that's kind of an odd fact for me to think about. I mean, it's not something you picture your president doing, as if he doesn't already have enough stress. He doesn't need to do that, too. The interesting thing is, since the 1800s, the late 1800s, early 1900s, I'm going to say 1920, when prohibition was put into place and vehicles were forced off of alcohol and onto petroleum for a fuel, it was done through legislation passed by alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. This is probably historically one of the most powerful, next to the IRS, one of the most powerful organizations inside the federal government. Before I get into that, I want to honor the callers. Scott from Daytona Beach, you're on.
Hi, Dr. Brooks. I wanted to add a thought of inspiration at a time when our country, I think, needs a sense of vision. I came upon some YouTubes of a performance of Charles Ives' Variations on America. There are several interpretations of his work. He was one of our foremost American composers. He was born 10 years after the Civil War ended, was church organist at the age of 14, and he wrote this piece at the age of 17. And it's called Variations on America, and you can find it several places. There are several artists who are organists who have play this piece, and it's quite powerful and quite inspirational in terms of vision. I personally prefer John Hong's version as well as Tom Trenny. I think they play it superbly. And I just wanted to pass that on to you and everyone out there that it is a wonderful piece. It only lasts about 9 minutes or so, but it's a wonderful way to reflect on what it really truly means to be American and what the values are here and what the vision can be and still has yet to manifest.
Well, I have my research cut out for me. I'm definitely going to look that up, and I'm going to listen to all the versions, and maybe we'll do a cut or so on this program. Yeah, it's, you know, the ideal that is America. You know, why people went through 30 days of seasickness and whatever else they could weather to get here to nothing. I mean, they marched out into the wilderness, put a pickaxe in the ground, and said, "This is the place." And yet they made this legacy. They made this tremendous, and it's not so much the quality of the soil or the crops or our productivity or even the rate at which we consume our planet. It is the spirit of what drove people here, immigrants from all over. And I really believe with all my heart that that spirit exists everywhere. It exists in Tibet. It exists in China. It exists in Argentina. It's just that opportunity met preparation, and they were able to get here, where at least for a couple hundred years anyway, we had the ability to reach the fullness of our creation. So much of our planet, it is not that way.
Yes. I'd like to throw in one other thing. I had a flash about 6 years ago when I was meditating that I saw what appeared to be like a shuttle from Star Trek Next Generation fly by my window. This was when I was meditating with my eyes shut. I had a flash of being somewhere else and seeing this. And at the time, that made no sense. but something happened about 2 weeks, Labor Day weekend. My Intrepid, 132,000 miles, the engine burned up the Saturday before Labor Day. And I was a Dodge dealer, and they gave me the news that it needed another engine. And so I was kind of like working with them and driving their cars, and I went next door to Nissan and found a Nissan Versa. And it's a white Nissan Versa, and it looks like just like a little miniature Star Trek shuttle. And, you know, I never thought of this until after the fact, but in a way I bought that, and that was kind of like, you know, it was like an image that came to me 6 years ago, but it was like a message, I suppose, from my future self, that was going to be my next vehicle. That's what I put together thus far.
That method of visualization is exactly how it happens. I mean, you come across that dream. I don't care if it's a motorcycle or a house or a wife or whatever it is that you're manifesting. That is the pulse that you send out in the universe, and if it resonates with the universe, it's coming to you.
And it's white, too. I don't know if I mentioned that. It's a white Nissan Versa. It's 36.5 miles to the gallon, which is the best thing I guess I could do. I wish I could buy one of your electric cars right now, but they're not out there. But
not out there yet. Does it have NCC 1701 on it?
Oh, gosh, wouldn't it be nice?
You might as well go all the way, man.
It's round very well. I mean, I can get over bridges rather quickly, and, I mean, I like it because it darts, and I've been driving cars that haven't been darting. I mean, it kind of takes me back to my first car, which was the Dodge Omni. I mean, that was a good little car to kind of get around during college and all that sort of thing, and it kind of was real good on gas, but somewhere along the line, they stopped making the really good ones, and they started to make the gas guzzlers again, except for Honda and Toyota.
Yeah, I don't really understand. I worked in the industry for over two decades, and they get something they have a good thing going. They have a good power plant that gets good power, and it has great economy. And they could just tweak it and make it a couple miles per gallon better economy every year. Make the car a little more streamlined every year, but no, they got to add 1,000 pounds to it and increase the horsepower. And next thing you know, you're back down to 22, 23 miles to the gallon.
Well, I'll get off so others can talk. Thank you, Dr. Brooks.
Thank you, Scott. Call back anytime.
Sure. Bye.
So as we consider, let's just call it the American ideal, for lack of a better word. We are at a point where these organizations, these bureaucracies inside of what we perceive as the government are now the great power in our government. The Food and Drug Administration, among other things, above and beyond making sure that our food is safe, or what it is we feed our pets is safe, and what we put on our face is safe, and what we put in our eyes is safe. But the way they go about it I have a hard time describing this. I just have a hard time describing this. It's not conspiracy theory, people. This is actual, factual activities by the Food and Drug Administration. They literally come in the front door with lawyers blazing, and they start writing fines. And not just a small amount of fines, not 5,000 here and 5,000 there. 5,000 times 10, 5,000 times 20, 5,000 times 50. And they don't do it to help the company get better. The company could just get better just by bringing in experts saying, you know, there's a better way to do this. You know, you need to wash this, and you need to use this kind of pump, and you need to use this kind of grease, and you need to change your filters and your air conditioner, and you got to make sure your building is positive and not negative so you don't suck outside pollutants into the building while you're making food. They could do that. They could give guidance, but that's not what they do. They walk in the front door, and they start taking your profits. And they take you down by the knees and make you bow your head and submit to them in fear. That is the Food and Drug Administration. Now you're going to learn something that's really amazing, absolutely stunning. Since the 1920s, tobacco has been controlled by alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. I don't know if you know this, but for a long, long time, the federal government subsidized tobacco growers because tobacco was very competitive, there were only so many smokers, and so they actually created what's called a tobacco base. You could only grow so much tobacco. This is how they limited what came into the market. And there were subsidies to help tobacco farmers stay competitive, even though the demand was way less than the supply ever could be. You know what happens when you overgrow a cash crop. The price falls through the floor, and the whole system breaks down. But whether you're talking about Raleigh, or you're talking about Winston, or you're talking about Marlboro, or any of the other brands, they were once the most powerful conglomerates in the world. They were right on the front line of everything that happened, from auto racing to airlines. I don't know if you've flown in an airplane lately, but they used to have ashtrays in the arm of the airplane, in the arm of the chairs of the airplane. Now they don't have that anymore, but in recent times, L-1011s and going back that old, they had ashtrays in the arm of the chairs. That's how far and how powerful the tobacco lobby was. Well, now, as soon as we get done with this call, I'm going to tell you something that is going to blow you away. Ramon, you're on line one. Welcome to the program.
How you doing, Dr. Brooks?
I'll make my story brief,
but I'll start off with there's like two different stories. One was a dream I had last night, and you ever had one of those dreams you really wish was real? In my dream, I took a vacation, and we went to a resort in Venus. Now, it looked like something like you're in Hawaii, but the amazing part was that you can see the Earth, and the Earth perfectly, and I could see North America, and then Jupiter was like the size of a beach ball. And I could see the sun, like, hitting it. And I know that's about my hopes and dreams of getting into space. But the other one that happened to me yesterday was, I know you don't believe in coincidence. So it was pouring rain in the East Coast. So in New York, it was pouring rain. I'm on my way to work, and I work for a catering company, and I'm in a tuxedo, so the tux is getting wet. I said, I'm going to put my intention into slowing this rain down. And I just took a deep breath and kept breathing and picturing pushing the air upwards with my intention. And the rain slowed down. And slowed down. It didn't stop, but it started drizzling. No longer was it pouring cats and dogs, it started drizzling. And then as soon as I got to my place where I was supposed to be, it started raining again. And then it stopped.
Wow.
If that was a coincidence, that was a pretty good one.
Well, I was on a river.
I was trying not to get excited over it, too, so I wouldn't lose it. Go ahead.
Well, I love this story. I got one. Maybe this is one-upmanship. Maybe it's not. We're on a river, and we're in two separate sailboats. There's 10 or 15 people in one boat, and I don't know, like 13 or 14 people in our boat. And we're sailing side by side, or just generally side by side, maybe 30 feet apart, 40 feet apart, something like that. And the boats were just, you know, foundering. I mean, the sails were just flopping back and forth, and they couldn't catch a breeze. And so somebody in the boat said, hey, Brooks, why don't you get us a breeze going? So I just raised my hand and pointed it at the sail. The sail filled with air, and the boat started pulling out. Well, the other boat was just sitting there. Nothing was happening, and they actually had to start their motor to make the speed that we were making, and their sail was as flat as could be, like it was laying on the ground. And ours was full, and we were, We were close hauled. I mean, we were flying up this river just from the wind. Now that's really weird, I know, but that's pretty cool.
Yeah, there's definitely something to it, and a lot of ancient masters would say it. I remember I'm not a Christian, but I love the story when Jesus gets mad with his disciples when they're on the boat, and they wake him up because there's a storm coming, and he like stops the storm, and he gets mad at them because they could have done it themselves, he tells them. Like something like that. I don't remember the story exactly. Do you remember
pretty
the story
much, I'm talking about? Yeah, pretty much. And after he said, funny. Peace be still, they whispered among themselves. I'm wondering who recorded this, really. They whispered among themselves, who is this man that even the wind obeys his command?
Yeah. But that just goes to and it's funny because I'll sit there and I have some friends of mine, and even on my dad's side of family, I would argue with them. I was like, what did he mean by this? And then if we do it, then it's witchcraft. I mean, which one are you following?
Oh, that's a good point. I never thought about that. So
yeah.
You didn't command the rain to stop because it's inconveniencing you for 15 minutes. I mean, it's not like anybody needs the rain in New York City, like something could actually grow. It's like being in the country, you could say, okay, stop the rain. And some farmers out there going, no. What's going on? Why did you stop? You know, somebody needs the rain out there and you're out there stopping it. But you're right.
Yeah, no, that's why purposely I was thinking in my mind, like, only for a few minutes and then you can continue, just till I get to my place.
You can make up for it after I'm inside. Yeah. Well, you know, all I could tell you is intention, properly focused at the right moment, has tremendous effects on the universe. To say it another way, you could say, to the mountain be thou removed, and it will be so. Now, I don't mean that literally, because you don't need to go out there removing mountains. Because if you do that, you know, there are deer and squirrels and birds and everything that live on the mountain. So we just leave the mountain alone, okay? It's figurative. Move the mountain in your own life with your own intention.
Yeah. So I'll keep listening off the phone to hear what you your big thing coming up that you're about to say.
Oh yeah. This is unbelievable. I mean, it's like all right, well anyway, thanks for the call, Ramon. So what you're about to hear is like the Untouchables. We're talking about bigger than Jimmy Cagney. We're talking about the biggest disclosure to you next to we found the hangar with the Roswell ship in it. That's how big it is. Believe it or not, under the orders and direction of the current president, tobacco has been moved from alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. The ATF, you know, Ruby Ridge, blah, 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 alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, has been moved to the FDA. It's true. It's true. Tobacco and the regulation of it and the jurisdiction over it has been moved to the FDA. You think cigarettes are expensive now? Just wait. And by the way, if you ever really wanted total control over your economics, here's a way to do it. Two people living in the same household, smoking cigarettes, one pack a day, each, one pack a day, is a car payment. More than $300 a month. $300 a month. $3,600 a year for a single household. That's the easiest raise advice I'm going to give you on this program. Quit. Put the FDA out of business. Stop smoking. I gave you another piece of advice a few months ago. You remember with Homeland Security that there were several grants that were given out to communities to hire more policemen. Hire more policemen, you know, cops on the street. Constables on patrol. Is that what we got? No, that's not what we got. What we got were more traffic cops. Why did we get more traffic cops instead of more police taking down meth labs, rousting illegal aliens that are living in this country without paying any taxes, without participating in the experience, only consuming? Why are they not working these kinds of enforcement activities? No. They're writing tickets. Why? Because the grant was only for 1 year. And they don't want to fire the cop after they have the cop. I mean, his cruiser cost $100,000, so, you know, we have to keep it going here. And the judges, you know, they have a salary, they got big houses. I mean, come on, if you're a judge in a small town or a medium-sized city, you've got to have a certain kind of income, right? Where do you think the money comes from? It comes from taxes, and it comes from traffic citations. Just for giggles sometime, if you have some time, some Tuesday afternoon at 2 o'clock, why don't you make your way down to traffic court? Just sit in the back and watch what goes on. You'll see about $25,000 a day. $25,000 a day in a small town that goes through that traffic court. That's the money the court lives off of. That's the money that pays the police department. Not so much the sheriff's department. They take care of warrants, and they take care of special events, and, you know, they take license plates off of people's cars that don't pay their insurance. But the police department is bought and paid for by traffic citations. And I told you, if you wanted to stop the revenueing and you wanted to stop the insurance taking so much of your money every year, even though you're a great driver, drive the speed limit. Drive the speed limit. Put them out of work. Save yourself some money on the ticket. Save yourself some money on the insurance. And you might save a few thousand dollars a year in gasoline. Drive the speed limit. Those are two things that you can do that can put more money back in your pocket than you can imagine. Stop smoking and drive the speed limit. And yes, there's plenty more fun things to do in life. And there are places that you can drive that car fast. So just do those two things. It's just a simple request. You can do it. You can do it. And I'm telling you, this is going to be an amazing hour. Third hour of X Squared Radio coming up. Phone lines will be completely open. And I want you to just let your thoughts go. Light up the phones, and let's finish this, because we're about to start a revolution. Let's just start it nice and smooth and quiet. Thank you. make sure as you wonder what to do with your October this year, make your way to the Vortex Conference up there in Burlington, Wisconsin. Click on the Vortex banner at X Squared Radio. Let's get right to it. Barry from Tucson, you're online too. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Brooks. I appreciate your comments about adding all the police. I'd like to bring your attention to what's going on down here in Arizona, and maybe across the United States for all I know. Apparently they're screening prospective police officers for sociopaths, effectively. That's all they want. And I've never seen anything like it. They're the most aggressive, intimidating group of new recruits that I've ever had the displeasure of encountering at a traffic citation. And their narratives are full of lies. It's useless. And they literally are extracting money from their tax base. It's just remarkable. And just wanted to throw that out and put it into your soup there with the police.
Well, I think that's exactly what's happening. I look at what was once known in the 70s as the prima facie speed limit. That's the yellow signs that you see on the road. You know, the suggested speed that you should do on any given road for the best of conditions. When I was going to school and learning how to drive in the state of California, they actually had a very excellent driver education program. The truth was that roads in California were designed originally for a natural speed for that road. I think freeways were by and large designed so that you could go 100 miles an hour. And in those days, dashboards were steel, and you only had a lap belt, and power brakes were really power brakes. I mean, you stepped on it with your little toe, and you locked up all four tires. There was no such thing as anti-lock braking. And, you know, accidents were fatal because they made windshields so that, at first they made them very hard so they wouldn't break, and that splattered human skulls. And then they made them rubberized so that they wouldn't, break out and go everywhere. And then what would happen is that people were decapitated because their head would go through the window and it wouldn't break. Yeah. So all of these safety things came around. And then cars got safer, and then they came out with radial tires and anti-lock braking and all kinds of things to help you control your vehicle. But still, there are bad drivers out there. I mean, there just are. They just don't belong on the road, wielding 4,000 pounds of steel around at 50 or 60 miles an hour. But, you know, they're of age and they're American and they can pass an eye exam and answer 20 very simple rudimentary questions, and so we give them a driver's license. By and large, most of those people drive the speed limit. They just drive the law. They don't get a citation, but they're a hazard to other people. And then you have those who are aggressive and they burn rubber off of every stoplight, which, you know, I did for 17 years. I burned rubber every single day in my truck. It was just the way I drove. And, yeah, I've had a few dozen speeding tickets in my life. But I stopped getting tickets about 2 years ago because I figured it out. It wasn't about enjoying the driving experience anymore. It was just about getting from point A to point B. How boring can that be? But you're exactly right. Law enforcement completely changed. About 5 years ago, maybe six, sometime during the Bush administration, sometime after 2001 maybe, police became militaristic. They were no longer public servants. They were there to intimidate. And whether they pulled you over for a routine traffic stop or they were doing roadblocks, checking for licenses, I got flashbacks of watching old World War II movies where these guys, not in your neighborhood, you know, Texaco station outfit, no, they're in black with body armor and nightsticks and semi-automatic pistols at their sides. These guys are military. They're not public servants anymore. You're exactly right.
You got it, Brooks. What is going on? You know, it's just, I mean, it's no fun to drive anymore. And you got to watch every little bit of minutia. It's what it is. It's a brave new world, I guess. You know, you got in cameras every couple miles. And, whatever.
Well, I don't really mind the cameras. I'd rather have the cameras than I would
the
cops.
No, the cameras are good because it moderates the aggressive drivers.
If you drive in the UK and you drive any of the M's, you know, the big motorways, they only put cameras at the on-ramps and off-ramps. The rest of the freeways is wide open.
No, these are speed cameras, you know, with the flashes and all that and the satellite links. And, yeah.
You know, I actually had an invention. It was a prismatic film that you place over your license plate. From the street level, you can read the license plate just fine. But if you elevate yourself just up 8 feet, it goes oblique, and you cannot read the license plate. And I
it's
was really
illegal here to put anything over your plate, and you have to remove the little thing that the dealer gives you when you buy a new car that says where you bought it and all that.
I know. They have a reason to do that. But if you're gonna drive around and drive through speed cameras and on that, this was kind of cool because.
Oh, it's excellent. That sounds brilliant. Yeah.
I like the prismatic version that, you know, it's like those little prismatic toys that you can play with. When you move it, it's sort of like a cartoon in front of you, four or five images stacked on top of one another in prismatic layers. Well, when you get up above 8 feet, it says no photo available.
Okay. You take care. I'm enjoying your talk.
All right. Thanks for listening. So there you have it. You know, many, many people still talk about the government. Well, the government's going to stop you from doing this. The government's going to do that. The government's going to do that. I need you to really wake up and realize there is no such thing as the government anymore. The government is now a coalition of bureaucracies. And I don't care whether you're pulled over by a policeman in Tucson or you're pulled over by a policeman in Los Angeles, or you're pulled over by a policeman in Odessa, Washington. The training is the same. Now, they might, because, you know, they're a member of the community and they drink at the same bar as the local people do, or, you know, they went to high school with everybody that lives in the town. Maybe that's a little bit different. But you get an outsider, someone that comes from another town, another city, and he's trained as a sheriff, and he's patrolling those country roads out there where they're so straight, you could shoot a .22 caliber bullet as far as you want, and it would land in the middle of the street in eyesight. They're monitoring those roads, and they're raking in billions, not a small amount of money, people, huge amounts of capital. And they're pulling it right out of your communities. And when you actually look at the breakdown of the cost of your traffic citation, you're going to be shocked. Now, you might think, oh, gee, it cost me $128 for the ticket. Yeah, it cost you $50 for the ticket and $78 for the court costs. And when that trooper or that policeman stands up in court, because he has to be there when all of the people that he wrote tickets to show up, because you must face your accuser according to our Constitution, he is your accuser, and so he faces you in court. You come to the bar and you say, I'm either guilty or I'm not guilty, or I'm guilty with extenuating circumstances. And the judge might say, well, since you came into court, you know, we'll file for minimum points, pay the cashier on your way out. It's $128, $50 for the ticket, $78 in court costs. If you say you're not guilty, that trooper is going to stand up and say whatever he has to say. He is going to do whatever he has to do. You read between the lines, you're going to pay. And if you say you're not guilty, that $128 just went to about $250, and they'll file for maximum points, and that will go on your insurance. It is confiscatory. There's no second chance. Why? Because they need the money. It's all about the money. If the money doesn't come in, they're going to raise the taxes. If they raise the taxes, the mayor gets fired. That's what it's all about. Now, here is the amazing thing. You, as a member of the community, are actually the empowered one. That's right. Your vote is important, but your desire to serve your community by serving in public office is even more important. Do you know who becomes the mayor? The person who has served on the city council the longest. Do you know who serves on the city council? Believe me, it is campaigned for and they'll spend money for it, because once you're on the city council, it is the road to all revenue. And once you're in the revenue stream, your job is to make more revenue. That's where it comes from. It comes from speeding tickets, traffic citations of all kinds. And that's why when you watch the roads and you see, don't see law enforcement driving the highways. You don't see them pacing traffic or going from here to there. No, no, no. You see them backed secretly into trees. You see them backed behind a building. You see them on the top of an off-ramp over your right shoulder as you, or an on-ramp over your right shoulder as you go speeding down the freeway, and they descend upon you like a vulture. I went to Atlanta one time and I was going around 285. I was doing the speed limit in HOV lane, had a guest with me. And guess what I saw? Yeah, 10 exits in a row, almost 25 miles of driving, and there were two cops at the top of every single on-ramp, and they were descending upon people like vultures. That one day, they probably pulled in 30 grand. They're not there to protect and to serve. They're there to use the law to generate revenue. Now, let's get into how big this can really get. You know that recently, maybe you don't, but you're going to know now, recently, President Obama was given emergency powers over the internet. That's right. Emergency powers over the internet in the United States. Now, wait a minute. I thought that was China that did that. I thought it was China that monitored all of the internet connections and parsed every word and captured emails and went through them before they went out of the country. I thought it was China that limited Google and made a Yahoo tell them everybody that was sending emails. I didn't think that was the U.S. Wake up, people. Your freedoms, your liberty, those things that people got on wooden ships 300 years ago, 400 years ago to get away from, have followed us home. And it's starting again. There's a problem this time, however. This time, there is no frontier. There is no wooden ship you can get on. There's nothing you can do. You can't sell your home and your savings and indenture yourself and move to a land where you can be everything you want to be. There are no more frontiers on this planet. Sounds a little silent, doesn't it? Sounds a little bit like there's nothing you can do from the day you're born to the day you die. But there is something you can do. I've given you two things tonight. You can quit smoking and you can drive the speed limit. That puts them out of business. Once the revenues drop, they'll take the next step and the next and the next. They eventually will take everything you have. Except one thing. They can't take your intention. They can't take the attention that you give to what it is you love. They cannot take what you think. They can't take what you dream about. And I can tell you right now that if you dream about it, if you visualize, I don't care if it's a car like Mark from Ohio, or if it's a house, or if it's a spouse, or if it's a career move, seeing the light at the end of the tunnel is not something that's handed to you. It's something you make. That is the frontier, and it is endless, endless. But we as a people, we not just as a nation, we as a people of Earth need to visualize the way we need to see this Earth, living at one with nature, living with abundance, eliminating scarcity. And let me tell you what it's going to take to do that. You know, two-thirds of the Earth still has to walk a very long way to get to a telephone. I don't mean two-thirds of the land mass. I mean two-thirds of the population of the planet. Of the 7 billion people that live here, close to 4 billion of them do not have a telephone, have never owned a toothbrush. If we're going to manifest this planet where we live at one with nature, where we're eliminating waste and disease, we're eliminating war and want and scarcity, then we need to manifest a planet where all people have the opportunity to reach the fullness of their creation. Because they created this life themselves. They are responsible for their life condition. If they're here living in poverty, eating dust, dying at an infant mortality rate of 80%, it is their choice. What we need to do is make sure that those individuals are educated to the point where they can make an educated choice. Now, does that mean that they're still going to have 12 and 15 children and they're still going to have their hand out eating the rice of the world and producing nothing? No, it doesn't. It means that they will be able to accomplish the things that they dreamed about. One of the things people need to realize is the reason a family has 12 children is so that two will live. If two had a high chance of living, they wouldn't have 12. It's just the natural order of propagation, the natural order of survival. And we as a people want to do more than survive. Misery is something we do not aspire to. We don't even like to see it on TV. And we become numb to it. Sooner or later, you've got to realize that everything that you work for, everything that you dream about, everything that you build upon and dream about stacking up for your kids or your grandkids, some kind of inheritance, some kind of legacy, making your mark, affecting the universe in a very powerful way, is being drained away from you because of your abdication of your responsibility to the community. You have decided to turn that over to others, and the others who are willing to run for and win those campaigns have something else in mind. And even if they don't, by the time they get there, they have to sit down, go to the gym, meet and talk with those who do. They have an idea, they have an agenda, they have a method to their madness, and it is to disempower you, to not allow you to affect the universe, and that is against the natural order of the universe. There is destructive interference with that, and part of it, most of it, all of it perhaps, is your intention to be something else. And they will try everything to control you at all levels, at the religious level, at the social level, at the economic level, at the educational level, and they will attack on all fronts. If you don't believe me, look at the legislation. If you don't believe me, look at the litigation in court. If you don't believe me, look at the education. Pick up a textbook sometime and read the history that they're teaching the young people today. It isn't the history you learned. It isn't the history your parents learned. It's a new history. They've realigned it with their methods. They've realigned it with their ideology and their philosophy. I'm not kidding. I walked into my son's third grade class one day. I was there as a volunteer. This was a few years ago, of course. Walked into the classroom, and on the chalkboard, written out in plain, perfect teacher English, Abraham Lincoln fought the Civil War to free the slaves. I said, what? Where did that come from? She said, it's in our textbook. That's what we're teaching today. We're learning about Abraham Lincoln. I said, well, yes, but that's not why the Civil War was fought. Who's teaching that? Who believes that? Those kids believed it, and they took it as their foundation to their next level of education. And there's more. Many, many, many more direct rewrites of history so that children will not take a history that you and I learned forward with them by which they judge and manipulate themselves or manipulate one another to come up with the justice that they perceive. It's a new one now. It's a new history. And we can argue as we might, but we're never going to win, because the organizations that buy the textbooks are the ones that write the rules. And the organizations that buy the textbooks are called school boards. School boards make the decision which textbooks to buy. And the school boards are run by school board members who are elected. And the superintendent of schools is elected. By the way, in most communities, you know that 70% of the tax base is spent on education. And the school superintendent, or at least the head of the school board, is the second highest paid person in the county. The highest paid will be the county judge executive, and the school superintendent right behind him, second in pay only to the county judge executive, which for rural communities is, for all intents and purposes, the mayor. Okay, the mayor is of a small town, but the county judge executive runs the budget for the schools, and that's where the big money is. So now you see how this begins to lay out. Education, legislation, litigation, and law enforcement. And now the enforcement of that law, the jurisdiction of that law, has changed hands. Alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. The T is for tobacco. And tobacco is now under the auspices of the FDA. And now you are seeing how the shuffling of power is beginning to work. So, as we put our intention together, there are things that are out of sync with it. And I said destructively interfering with it. Let me explain just a little bit. Go down to Best Buy and buy yourself a set of noise cancellation headphones. You can buy them pretty cheap now. Anywhere from $25 to $100. It depends on if you want the Awai or you want the Bose. But noise cancellation headphones work like this. They have a little tiny microphone on the outside of the headphones. They pick up the ambient noise that's around you. If you're in an airplane, it picks up the roar of the jet and the wind going by the skin of the airplane. It picks up that sound, and it moves it electronically 90 degrees. Just delays it just a little bit. And it feeds it back into the speakers carry the music or the television message or what, or the video that you're watching on the airplane. What happens is that destructive interference, exactly the outside noise, fed against the outside noise, 90 degrees out of phase, cancels up to 18 decibels, that's powers of 10, cancels that sound. That's called noise cancellation headphones. It's so effective because the microphone picks up exactly the ambient sound around you. Now, it can't pick up something like speech and block it, because that's not really an ambient sound. It has to be something that's sort of like white noise that's out there. Yes, voices will be a little bit quieter, but a voice is a very complex sound, and it changes in timbre and volume and all kinds of things. Not so with the white noise around you. That's pretty much a same noise, and you can cancel that pretty effectively. But you see what's happening. The music in the headphones is supposed to be the dominant sound. So you want to listen to the words of the video that you're watching on the airplane on the little LCD screen in the seat in front of you. You don't want to hear the airplane. And so they feed the airplane noise back against itself and cancel it out, and that makes a fuller, richer piece of music or speech that you're listening to, because the airplane noise is now knocked out of the way, along with some of the voice, but not all of it, and therefore it really gets noticeably clearer for you. You don't have to compete against it to listen to the track that you want to listen to. That's the way destructive interference works. The dominant signal comes through without the background signal blocking it out. So when I talk about destructive interference and human intention, which is which? The government, the bureaucracies that make up the government have an agenda. And it is quite opposite from human nature. It is not something that you over there would support. In fact, I don't know anybody that would support it. No one would support it. It's so insanely confiscatory. And yet, that's the background noise. And it's received, it's delayed, it's fed back against, and the only message that comes out is the government message. The bureaucracy, their news release, their article, their propaganda, their brochure, their radio message, their public service announcement is what comes through. You don't hear the people, because their voice is nothing but noise to them. And they delay it 90 degrees, feed it right back into the process, and it has no effect. It is so destroyed that it just doesn't get any momentum. And before too long, the people give up, and they go away, and they accept. And gasoline goes from $1.05 to $2.05 to $3.05 to $4.05. And the organized takeover of energy moves on, with now billions more in the bank each month. Each month, this country generates so much oil. It will blow your mind how much oil this country can generate. However, and by the way, it's generated pretty darn cheap. The leases on the property, the production costs, the pipelines, the trucking, it's dirt cheap. Domestic oil can still be produced for under $30 a barrel and make a profit. But that's not what they produce it for. No. They produce it at $70 a barrel, which is what OPEC has set the price of oil for. So 61 to 63% of the oil that's purchased by this country, and by the way, it's about 14 million barrels a day, 14 million barrels, 42 gallons in each barrel, by the way, 61 to 63% of that is imported. Imported. That means more than half of the oil that we burn in this country is imported from countries where it costs us $70 a barrel. I'm scratching my head here. I'm slapping my forehead here. Wait a minute. Aren't we in business? Don't we want a low cost of goods sold? Wouldn't it be better to buy $30 oil and make $2.95 a gallon? Why would we buy $70 a barrel oil and make $2.95 gasoline out of it? Makes absolutely no economic sense whatsoever. And yet it happens. Why does it happen? Are they trying to save our oil for a rainy day, or trying to use up the OPEC's oil so that our oil will survive and then we will be the dominant oil supplier in the world? Hardly. Hardly. We only have about 2% of the world's oil supply. We consume 20% of the world's oil supply. People, those economics don't work. Those economics don't work. There has not been a major oil find on this planet since 1972. Oh, you've heard press releases here and there of a few billion here and there. I'm telling you, we, this country, consumes 14 million barrels a day. And that's pretty much flat until the year 2015, and it goes beyond that. If you don't believe me, go to EIA.gov and read it for yourself. They have every single year going out for 25 years already calculated how much oil they're going to use. We're about to change the equation. Why? Because we, the people, are no longer the background noise. We, the people, are generating a signal that cannot be quenched. We, the people, cannot be fed into a noise-cancellation headphones and turned down to the point where we can't hear them outside the halls of Congress. It's just a murmur out there. The real business takes place behind the closed doors of the bureaucracies in Washington. We got news for you. We're an informed populace. We're an intelligent people. And we have figured out a way to stop buying gasoline forever. All we have to do is buy an electric car. All we have to do is buy an electric car. Gasoline usage in this country will drop by 75%. You still have a gasoline car, but you only need to put gas in it once every 5 weeks because you make all the gas-guzzling trips. You know those ones. 2 trips to the soccer field each day, 2 trips to the elementary school, 1 trip to the middle school for the sports games, the trip to the movies, the trip to the grocery every day to and from work. All of that can be driven with electric. Guess what? You don't have to buy gasoline but once every 5 weeks. You just cut the oil usage substantially. And if you drive a diesel, the picture is just as bright. You get just as much power, better mileage, your engine lasts longer, there's no net addition to the CO2 in the atmosphere, and it's going to cost less than petroleum diesel. Oh yeah, it's coming. We have choices. But here's what you, the people, have to do. You have to look for the choice. You've got to look for the choice. And I've been telling you this for 4 years. That kind of technology will never hit the showroom in a cost-effective way that you can buy unless you start setting aside a little bit of money and start sending it to these companies that are trying to bring this technology out. I don't mean Nissan. I don't mean General Motors or Ford or Chrysler or Navistar. You gotta find a company that's doing it. You gotta find a company that is actually hiring people, that actually has technology that can hit the streets running. And you gotta invest in them. You have to set aside some money to do it. $10, $20 a month. Come on, there are 230 million of you out there. 150 million of you are working. And you're having 60% of your money ripped out of your paycheck against your will. You pay it in income tax. You pay it in sales tax. You pay it in excise taxes. You pay it in unbelievable ways, licensing and on and on and on. You pay it on your gas bill. You pay it on your electricity. Everything that you consume or that you earn is taxed by the government. And still, I'm asking you to reach into your pocket and start funding this technology because it will pay off. It will pay off. Leave the gas pump in the cradle. Drive the speed limit. And above all, quit smoking. Let's put the FDA out of business. Because if they're not making money, their budget gets cut back. And that's what we want to see. We want to see them cut back to the point where they have a sold sign on the door. And when are we going to get around to firing the IRS anyway? What the heck is that about, people? Every single year, you tell everybody what you make, what you earn. You put your Social Security number down there, your address, and you tell them everything you earn. And if you don't, your employer is going to do it. And Congress sits up there and says, well, we need to manipulate this class against that class because we want to run for election. Fire them all. There's only 435 people in Washington, people. I can find that many right here in Idaho. You could find that many right down there in Tucson. You could find that many in Tupelo. You can find that many in Minnesota, in Fargo, in New York City, in Fort Lauderdale. You can find that many people anywhere in this country. 435 people need to be replaced in November. So let's get about it. Come on. 2010 is the next two-year cycle of election. In 4 years, we can have this mess cleaned up. All you have to do is be aware, know what's going on, and make some moves. And invest your money in some technology laying out there that might be in your garage or your neighbor's garage or your neighbor's attic or a little startup company somewhere that's not even publicly traded. Why don't you do some search on the internet and try to find an electric car company or try to find a waste management company or try to find a fuel generation biodiesel or algae to biodiesel and invest in it. $20 a month, $240 a year. You waste more than that going to the movies. Tax yourself voluntarily. And let's feed a few billion dollars of our own money outside the system, outside the set of headphones that play us the government song. It's time we took this country back. And then let's not stop here. Once we do it, once we shoot these guys out of the sky with our own freedom, let's teach other countries how to do it. Because there are no more wooden ships. We can't get on a boat and go to the frontier anymore, people. This is it. This was the frontier. They caught up with us. We outnumber them. We can be united. We can be informed. The revolution starts here. All right, I'm done with my rant. Open the phone lines again, toll free, anywhere, 888-228-4494. Anywhere else on planet or off planet, if you can get to a cell phone tower, you can get to us, 530-776-5154. I'll give you a second to think about it. Let's get it going. Explorers. We'll open the phone lines again. 888-228-4494. Anywhere on planet, off planet, you can reach a cell phone tower. You can get to us. 530-776-5154. So what we have talked about tonight is we have talked about empowering the community and empowering the individual within the community, because this was once the frontier, and before that there were other frontiers, and population, race after race, population after population. We regulated ourselves into extinction. We built an organization, a social organization of people that could not sustain themselves, because we had more people living upon off of the labors of the workers, of the people that actually do stuff in this country and this world, than there were people to generate that revenue. When I was young, you know, there was a certain number of people working and a certain number of people retired. Now, we not only have the senior citizens having to go back to work to earn more money and displacing teens, which now don't have the ability to earn a living and understand what the ability, what the experience of having a job and interacting with other coworkers and bosses is like. But now we have an army. Oh, no. Not an army. We have another nation of bureaucracies. Hundreds of thousands of them, maybe even millions of them, doing nothing, living off of you. And I want your voices to be raised in such a way that they don't hit the noise cancellation headphones. They don't become one of those loud, silent screams that's just the white noise in the background. What we need is focus of attention. One single person can manifest a life that is the envy of not only himself, his children, and those around him, but of all the universe. You have the ability. You have the tools. You've read the books. You've listened to the tapes. You know how to meditate. You know how to envision the dream. Teach it to someone else, and then let's set a dream for the earth. Not just a dream for you, not just a dream for your town or your state or even your country. Please, let's envision a world, a planet where the earth and the people on it and all the animals live in harmony with one another. We have the ability, we have the technology right in our own hands. Do not rely upon the bureaucracies to funnel the money where it needs to go so these companies can get a foothold, so that things like electric cars, things like biodiesel, things like algae for to generate high protein and to generate fuels, renewable fuels made by the sun, 3-4 times the return on energy that you put in, and it's clean. And we stop burning petroleum for transportation. This technology is here. It's right now. And let me tell you how frustrating it is to sit in an empty building with equipment standing on its side, waiting for pipes, waiting for tanks. Why? Because there's no money to put it together, to make it happen, to make it function, and yet it would be profitable, and it would be great for the economy for it to happen. Why doesn't it have money? Because the bureaucracies are not funneling the money to it to make it stand on its own 2 feet and get started. It has to rely upon you, the people. You've got to go out, do some research on the net, find a company that's doing something to clean up, to provide us an alternate fuel, to provide us electric cars. Do you know how many new cars sold in 2008? 16.5 million new cars in the United States. In 2009, it's somewhat less than that. Cash for clunkers kind of caught up the market a little bit. It's probably somewhere around 13 or 14 million new cars in America. Just in America. Guess how many of them were electric? None. Zero of them were electric. They had hybrids. Hybrids, yes, but no plug-in electrics. Nothing that doesn't use gasoline. Why is that? Why is that? The demand is much higher than that. It's millions of vehicles per year. 2 or 3 million vehicles a year people would gladly drive because they can save on gas, because they help the environment, because it does what they want the car to do. So where are the cars? How come there isn't one in the showroom? How come there isn't one in your garage? Mark called us tonight and said he was interested in buying an electric vehicle and he couldn't find one. Why can't he find it? That doesn't make any sense at all. China's driving them. France is driving them. Germany's driving them. Argentina's driving them. Why can't we drive an electric vehicle? That's the great question. The reason you can't drive an electric vehicle is because you haven't gone out to find an electric car company and help them get started. That's what it takes. You're waiting for it in the showroom. There's a lot of work to get that car to the showroom. So I'm asking you to take responsibility for your country. Take responsibility for a community. Take even greater responsibility for your planet. And let's get it done. It's out there for the having. It is out there for the having. Trust me, it is out there. You just need to do a little bit of research. Yes, I could make this one big infomercial if I wanted to, but I'm not going to. I want you to find it. I want you to do the research. I want you to pay a little bit of price to get out there and find out what is available and what is needed for it to come to reality. And it will, because you manifested it. You intentioned it, and it will. And nothing, no power in the universe can resonate against it. You'll get a little bit of destructive interference, but you're going to be inside the headphones now, not outside the headphones being canceled out by the bureaucracies. You can do it. We'll be back next week with more X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. And I want you to pay attention to what's going on out there. Just read the news for what it is. Read it kind of historically, like you would scriptures. Somebody says something, and you go, wait a minute. Not that I'm disagreeing with the doctrine here, but who wrote this? Were they even there? Did they read somebody else's a version of a version of a version and give me their version? That's a good point. And I don't care if you're reading the Popol Vuh or if you're reading the Sefer Yetzirah. Use your mind to lens the information so that you get the full truth of it. I can tell you, your intention is the most powerful force in the universe. Many, many great leaders, including Jesus himself, told us we can do what he does and even greater. Believe it. It's true. Now stand upon it and reach, because there is no limit to that. We'll see you next week. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.